Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Packaging Europe podcast. My name is Elisabeth Skuder, and today we'll have a look at extended producer responsibility, short EPR. As many of you obviously will be aware, it's a policy tool that extends the packaging producer's financial and or operational responsibility for a product to include the management of the post-consumer stage in order to help meet recycling and recovery targets. This means that EPR policies generally shift the waste management cost of physical collection partially or fully from local governments to producers. So with me today to discuss EPR, its effects on businesses in the EU and the UK, and how it can help with sustainability challenges, and also what to expect when implementing it and how to tackle these the challenges it can pose, is Gillian Carside-White, who is Consulting Director at Aura. And Gillian has over 20 years experience in the packaging industry and is also very passionate about sustainability, I gather. So I'm sure we'll have a very interesting conversation. So welcome to the podcast, Gillian. And looking forward to you sharing your insights.
Fabulous. Yeah, great to be here. Thank you.
And to get us started, could you briefly introduce yourself and maybe talk a little bit about the work you do at Aura?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you've introduced very well, that I've had a number of years in the packaging industry, always structural packaging. So I was a packaging development manager for many years, and it's really that structural knowledge that I've held on to really tightly. But certainly sustainability has existed for a number of years and decades in different forms. But only now we're really seeing this holistic approach to the circular economy, sustainability, and doing the right thing in packaging. And that's what we've been working really hard from an Aura perspective, consulting with major brands and retailers to help guide them through the complexities of legislative requirements, consumer pressure and perception of sustainability, as well as costs. Unfortunately, I'd love to say that sustainability doesn't cost money, but unfortunately, at this moment in time, it does have a financial impact. So we help guide our clients through the maze, certainly if it's multiple European countries, to really understand what their requirements are and how to tackle that. And we've also developed various services and products to be able to facilitate that process and ease the burden, because it is a substantial impact on businesses to be able to comply. It is the right thing to do. We shouldn't shy away from that, but it does have an impact on day-to-day business.
So you have obviously many years of experience in the packaging industry, and you said you previously worked as a packaging development manager as well, which I'd imagine gives you great insights into the industry. And I was wondering, what changes have you seen in the industry over the last 20 years? And would you say that the packaging industry is on the right track towards sustainability? And what still needs to be done to get there, to achieve fully sustainable packaging?
Yeah, I think there's no denying 20 years ago, there wasn't much change in packaging regulation. It didn't really change very often. If anything, it evolved slowly. What we're seeing in the last 5 years is legislation has really had this huge impact on the industry. It's exploded across the globe. So it's not just Europe, it is absolutely worldwide. There's a lot more activity, there's a lot more noise in the industry, but actually consumers are also pressurizing brands and retailers to make meaningful difference. Unfortunately, consumers are not always well informed. So it's finding that fine line. But we have seen, so if I go back to being a packaging development manager, so in the early 2000s, it was very much about reducing packaging. How do we reduce the weight of packaging? So yes, that was a step in the right direction. It wasn't a holistic view on sustainability, but let's produce less. That will have less impact. That will end up less into landfill. And as that has evolved, it has become much more holistic. So it is about selecting the right materials. Can we recycle? Can we use reusable packaging? Can we eliminate packaging? you know, all of those types of discussions are really, really important and should be embraced. But it is about making sure that we do work towards this circular economy. Is it within reaching distance yet? I'd love to say it is. I don't think we're there yet, but we're certainly moving in the right direction. Certainly all the people that I speak to have 2025 goals. Will we get to, you know, the ideal situation in little over 2 years? Probably not. You know, if we're being really truthful with ourselves, probably not. But doing something is better than doing nothing. And I always use the phrase, if we don't reach for the stars, we'll never get off the ground. So it is about making sure that we do have ambitious targets. And it is about incremental change. We haven't always got the infrastructures in place. There are many wheels that have to move in the same direction for us to make the perfect solution. And even once we get there, there will be improvements. So I think it's a hard question to answer with a yes, but I would love to say yes, that we are getting there. We're certainly moving in the right direction.
Yeah, that's kind of my impression as well. It's sort of things are moving in the right direction, but still work needs to be done. But yes. Yeah, let's be optimistic. And going back to the topic of EPR, would you be able to define broadly what it actually is and what does it mean for the packaging industry?
Yeah, so EPR, Extended Producer Responsibility, is about making sure that everyone takes responsibility for their packaging and that then funds infrastructures to then be able to dispose of the packaging. So it's not enough just to put packaging on a shelf or on a virtual shelf to sell your product. Yes, it is a carrier of product, so it has a core function, which sometimes is forgotten in the sustainability discussion, that packaging is there to protect and preserve the products that it contains. So we absolutely must embrace that and do that to its full potential, but also take responsibility all the way through the process to then dispose of it responsibly and make sure that that doesn't have a negative impact on our planet. So without EPR, then the infrastructures don't get the funding that they need to then be able to improve. We don't get the recycle it put into packaging to then create that circular economy. So when I talked earlier about the number of wheels that need to be in place to make this huge, important industry work to its full potential, at this moment in time, there is a much reduced quantity of post-consumer recycle available to manufacturers to put back into packaging. So we need better infrastructures. We need more efficient infrastructures to then be able to ensure that that valuable material that saves us having to use virgin materials and petrochemical plastics to then be able to make sure that we're making the best use of the resources we have. And EPR is vital in that whole process.
Leading on from that, you hinted at it already, that obviously getting materials back into the loop is a key challenge. And I didn't want to ask you about these sustainability challenges the packaging industry faces and how EPR can help with achieving those.
There are so many complexities, and EPR does add to the complexity in some areas because, you know, there's more information needed to be able to do that. But certainly, you know, the problems that are faced is that we are continually putting new materials into the market. And historically, globally, we are pretty good at recycling aluminium cans, for example, because they can be fully recycled and put back into a new aluminium can. Where it gets more complex is polymers, so plastics, where there are many, many, many materials out there. So different polymers, how they recycle are different. The consumer education piece, in my opinion, just needs to be better. We need to be communicating and educating to ensure that we get the right materials put back into, you know, recycling infrastructures. And interestingly, I read an article this morning about perceived sustainability from a consumer perspective. And I was just speaking to a colleague earlier that unfortunately, consumers are viewing sustainable packaging solutions in a very different way to you or I probably would. So a toothpaste tube, for example, in a carton box with the tube inside is perceived by many consumers in this study to be more sustainable than just the plastic tube by itself, because they're seeing the fiberboard rather than the plastic. But unless, you know, we educate, then that's never going to change. So we need to educate, but we also need to make sure that we put materials back into this process. And those are big challenges that we as the industry need to face into much more actively, I believe.
Absolutely. Yes, that's something we come across quite a lot in Packaging Europe as well, the consumer perceptions and then what the actual studies say. So
exactly.
Yeah, we try to put the word out as well, obviously. And EPR, kind of the rules sort of somewhat vary from country to country, and that adds to complexity. So I was wondering if you could give us a bit your take or your sort of a quick summary of, you know, how it varies.
It differs, but it also evolves quite quickly as well. So there are many challenges. And I think certainly what I talk to our clients about on a regular basis is making sure that you've got the data. Without the data, it doesn't really matter what the rules are. You absolutely need to know your packaging. And many countries have eco-modulation. Other countries don't. Eco-modulation varies as well. Bonus malus schemes versus straight eco-modulation. There's all sorts of complexities, but it all boils down to, effectively, will we get to consistent EPR schemes across all of Europe? I'd like to think in the distant future, we probably will. However, each EPR scheme is set up because of the infrastructures that are in place in each country, and they are different. So the UK, for example, we don't compost very well. At the moment, we don't have the infrastructure in place to be able to do that. Whereas in many European countries, there are substantial compostable facilities. So again, it's about making sure that the EPR works for that country. That does add complexity for global brands and retailers, because each scheme is different. So I would love for it to be consistent. I don't think that's going to happen in the next few years, unfortunately. I know there's talk, but certainly it's about making sure that no matter what, we can recover. We can recover the materials, and we can invest in infrastructures that work for these countries. But certainly eco-modulation is probably the biggest variance across countries, and how that's measured and what is recyclable and where the demand sits for materials differs by country as well, because we do have different products. We do manufacture different materials in different countries, and certainly global brands and retailers, it can be a little bit of a nightmare to try to navigate and meet the submissions. Again, the submissions differ. So some are annual, some are every 6 months, and some are quarterly. So it's about making sure that everyone understands their requirements from an EPR scheme per country and complies with the data sets that are required to be able to be submitted in a timely manner, which can also be a little bit of a challenge on resource.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, you talked about the challenges already. Are there any other challenges as well that organizations can expect due to EPR requirements?
The biggest challenge is data. So the biggest challenge, certainly for retailers, is they've been so far removed from the packaging data in the past. Yes, there's, you know, when we look at the UK, for example, there are PRN, so packaging recovery notes, which require some data, but it tends to be retrospective data. So they capture the data once a year and then be able to report. What we're seeing with EPR is, because of the frequency of the submission increasing, there is a greater need for live and accurate packaging data. So as we expect from a product recipe and ingredients list, we expect that to be up to date, and everything in that product is exactly as it says on the piece of packaging. That's what we need for packaging. We need live and accurate packaging data to then be able to submit for EPR. Because let's be honest, no brand or retailer wants to pay more than they absolutely need to. But unless you've got that data, it's much harder to be able to navigate that. But it's not just about the data. It's about the resource required to be able to capture that data, cleanse that data, ensure that it stays up to date. And that's certainly something that we're seeing a lot of clients and potential clients asking for help in that whole process.
And on the subject of data, could you sort of clarify a bit more what data exactly is needed to manage EPR in the best way possible?
Yeah, so when I talk about granular data, it's very hard to quantify because every country requires something slightly different. The UK, again, as an example, our my home country, we don't even know what data is going to be captured for EPR yet, even although it goes live next year. So there's still a need for more information. But what I would say is that the level of packaging data that we've historically held in packaging specification databases is likely to need to increase. So you must, as a bare minimum today, you must know the weight of your packaging, the substrate of that packaging. But as we get into eco-modulation, it's about the adhesives, it's about the ink coverage, it's about so much more than just the basic elements of packaging now. So it is delving deep into the packaging data that you have and your suppliers. So packaging suppliers have this data. Everyone has this data from a manufacturing perspective. So it does exist. What we need to be able to do is make sure that that goes upstream to the brands and retailers so that they have access to the same data to then be able to make informed decisions. So again, looking at our client base, it's about making sure that we give the information as early as possible for them to make informed decisions before. So historically, when we develop packaging, it tends to be, unfortunately, an afterthought. So a brand will come up with an amazing product and then say, which packaging shall I put it in? And then it tends to follow that route to market. Now what we're seeing is packaging being selected at the same time as product because it has such financial impact, not only on purchasing the packaging, but on its end of life. So really looking at total cost of goods with an EPR mindset at the end to then make the right decisions. So the right decisions for the planet, the right decisions for, financial implications, and also right selection for the product itself. And we are seeing that moving further and further upstream, which can only be a good thing to be able to help inform and plan and budget for the requirements that are inevitable at the end of life.
Yeah, that connection and linking up is so important, isn't it, to get the best results. Do you have any other sort of tips for organisations to how they can tackle this challenge and sort of how they can get it right?
As I say, legislation is changing rapidly. And so we look globally, not just from a European perspective. And I can honestly say when we work with some global brands and retailers, that we do an assessment of the legislation. And as soon as we've finished, something's changed. So it's constantly moving challenge that we face. So what I would say to anybody is not one person has all the answers. It is about making sure that brands and retailers have a network of contacts that can help and support them in that whole journey. So stay up to date with the regulations, plan ahead and start now. Don't wait until it becomes an issue. It is about making sure that you're proactive on the front foot. As soon as you become reactive, it's likely going to cost you more money. So it's about making sure that everyone is ready. And EPR schemes have existed for many, many years across Europe. There are other countries that are only just starting on that journey. So it is about making sure all the data starts now. So if your brands and retailers don't have accurate and live packaging data, start that process now. Make sure that you're engaging the right people in your supply chain, capture that data, make sure that it remains up to date. And I think that's the one thing that can be forgotten there is an acceleration up to the point of submission, and then submit the data, and everybody sits back for a little bit until the next submission is required. And actually, it needs to be continual. And as soon as it is continual, it becomes less effort in a shorter period of time. So I would say legislation updates are imperative to be able to make sure that everyone knows what they need to achieve, but also make sure that they have access to the data that they will require for all countries that they're selling their products in, because there's not always exemptions. So some countries have exemptions to EPR depending on the volume of material that they put in the market or their turnover. Others, if you sell one product, then you pay EPR. So again, it's about don't make assumptions. Every country is different.
And I wanted to sort of look towards the future a little bit in my final question, and get your thoughts on how do you think the whole landscape is going to evolve and how requirements could change in the coming years. Obviously, that's a hard one, and there's so many different countries, and you know that's hard. But I thought I'd throw the question at you anyway.
Oh no, absolutely! I'd love to say that I had a crystal ball, because that would be amazing. I think this is just the first step. So EPR is the first step towards how we hopefully meet the Paris Agreement. So reducing climate impact, absolutely, we should be focusing on. And I think we will get to the point where carbon life cycle analysis becomes the norm. So yes, we'll have EPR, but we'll also be assessing and communicating the impact each packaging component has on our environment. If that was implemented today globally, it would cripple the industry. It would cripple the industry on effort and cost. But I do think that incremental steps in that direction are inevitable. And as we get more data from EPR, that will evolve. We will be asking for more and more data. And I genuinely believe that most schemes today have much more information requirement than we have had previously. That will only increase. So we will get more stringent on the materials that we can recycle well. We may even restrict more materials to then reduce the amount of variance across the industry where possible. It's not always possible, because again, it's about thinking about the core functionality of packaging, and that's to protect the product. So if it's going to have a detrimental effect on the product, we shouldn't do it, because food waste has a much bigger impact than product and then packaging, sorry. So it's thinking about the whole process and not just tunnel vision on just packaging. And I've been in packaging all my life. It's all my working life. So it's hard to not be too tunnel visioned on packaging alone, but it does have such a wider implication if you get it wrong. So it is absolutely about making sure that I just think the future is going to be more complex. It's going to add more granular detail, but for good reason, for the right reasons. We're not there yet. We might not be there in 5 years' time, but I do believe that that is the route to market that we will end up going, that it will be life cycle analysis. We will be looking at water usage. So we will be looking at things that we're not necessarily focused on today in every industry, but it's certainly coming.
Yeah, sounds like there's some exciting developments ahead, and we'll be in the front row here at Packaging Europe, watching it all evolve and reporting on it. Yeah, that's a great note to end this podcast on today. So thank you very much, Gillian, for being here today and for answering my questions.
No problem at all. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you to everybody for listening as well. Obviously, make sure you subscribe to Packaging Europe, and also subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast listening app. Thank you.